Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's Toast of the Arts show with Nancy and Lisa. Today, we welcome back Victoria Chick. You know, she's been on our show for years. She's a contemporary figurative artist and early 19th, 20th century print collector. She's based out of Silver City, New Mexico, which is an amazing art community. It's an amazing art destination. So it's in the southwest corner of New Mexico. Many of you know about Santa Fe and Taos, but Silver City is like the rising art community that you want to check out. And she's busy. Not only is she an artist in the community, but she's also working on a project, which it's a big project. It is the Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center. And so we're excited about that happening in Silver City.
I love it.
You know, Victoria had this in her mind and she's like, I want to do this. And it's actually really happening. So we're excited about that. We've talked a lot about it on the shows, but today we're going to talk about actually art museums in general, the ones in the big cities and the ones in the small towns, and what are they like? And, you know, I think they're a big part of a destination, but welcome back. How are you, Victoria?
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I'm glad to be here and I'm talking about my favorite subject.
Yeah, art, awesome.
And art museums, you know, and everyone go to art, victoriachick.com or artistvictoriachick.com. But art museums, this is something, let's just start with this, because go to an art museum, sometimes people will bypass them because they think, oh, la-di-da, I need to know everything about art. And, you know, it's, that could happen, right?
And I'm sure it does. I guess I go to art museums and have gone to art museums since I was probably 11 or 12 years old when I really started going to them because my parents took me. And I'm not sure that I ever begged to go at that age, but I was always happy to be there because I'd always, you know, always see something that I would really like, you know. And I think that's one of the things about, you know, if you could see one painting or one sculpture or one piece of art that you really like on a trip to a museum, I mean, that's the satisfying thing.
And, it's true. Pictures and sculptures, are, other than the printed word, which I love the printed word, and I also love the paintings and the sculptures, but visually, it's easier, at least in my mind, to see a picture than the words. Because it just says it.
Yes.
And other than reading, which I also love, but reading is a different kind of medium. And, you know, I think most people react to that. It's kind of like why they have stop signs. They're red and they're white and they still say stop, but it's because your mind reacts to a picture first.
Yes. You have a symbol that you're seeing before you read the word.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I think that I think we are meant to look at pictures.
Since I've been involved with this, you know, making a museum right now, which is an interesting process, but since I've been involved with that, I have actually gone back and looked at the history of museums, and it's been interesting because it used to be, you know, like, the history of museums in the United States, you know, is not that old.
Not compared to Europe.
People preserve things, you know, certain people preserve things of all kinds of things, you know, historical things, furniture kind of things, art things. And when they would display them, they would use to hang them, and they put the name of the picture, the artist, if they knew who that was, maybe when it was done, if they knew when that was. And it was, you just went around a room and you looked at these objects. And then things changed a little bit. It became more of an educational thing, not just preservation and exhibition, but it became a way to educate the visitors that came so that they would have more of an explanation. They would actually curate a show so that the things that were displayed made sense to have them together. So they would represent, the work of one artist, or they would represent the work of a particular era or a particular group of artists. And that was more interesting, I think, for people, because they understood, they could put what they were seeing in a context. Mm-hmm. And then things have changed. And I would say like in the last 20 or 25 years, museums have shifted again, and they're doing their displays. So there's more of an interaction between the viewer and what's being displayed. Mm-hmm. So, and they're coming up with all museum, I'll focus on museumists, the people that work in museums, are coming up with some real novel ways to let people interact. And one of the things that's helped that is all the electronic and the video potential that is available now.
Well, is that kind of like what's happening with the Vincent van Gogh, in that immersive experience where people are walking into rooms just surrounded by, sunflowers and, his work, this immersive experience, right, where it's almost 3D. It is 3D, I think.
Yeah, and that's a good example, because some people then they'll set up a thing where you can try to imitate his brush strokes or his paint, his color choices.
Yeah.
So they have more of an idea what was going through Van Gogh's head at the time he was doing it. Maybe not everything that was going through his head, because he had a very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's wild. That's wild.
But all these things are they're interesting, they're educational, and they're entertaining at the same time. So if you can work entertainment into learning, people are a lot more apt to go to a museum.
We have this, for those who are watching this, we have the giant horse, the American horse. This is a sculpture done, and you can see it at the Frederick Meyer Gardens and Sculpture Park in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it is done by Nina Akamu. Hope I'm saying it correctly. But this was, inspired by Leonardo da Vinci. But when we were there, we were in the summer. Now they're open, right now we're talking, it's winter and snow and ice and all of that. But when we went there, we were in summer, and we got on a tram and went around with the tram, and they took us around the garden, and we had this amazing interpreter, or curator, basically. And they have a museum section on the inside of the, you go through the botanical gardens, and it's so different. They have a Japanese sculpture area and like a Zen garden. But they have, Pablo Picasso is out there. George Segal, this is where, we were talking about his art. They had an exhibit in there. So it was a traveling exhibit or exhibit there, and it rotates. But these sculptures are something they're a fixture. So a lot of what we've seen in these kind of museums is that there's the fixture and then it rotates and changes. They have new things coming in all the time. But going around, part of the fun for us was actually going on that tram and hearing just fun stories that when you're walking this in the middle of summer, it's a trek. And those fun stories may go out the window a little bit when you're trekking it so much. You know what it's like to be a day at the zoo or whatever. It's a haul, but you're having such a good time. But going around and having that curator who had such a personality, and also as a journalist, he was a crime reporter, so that was fun. But he was going around telling us the story behind the artist, fun anecdotes about the artist, or the, just really made it connectable. Like if you didn't know about Pablo Picasso, by the time he drove you by, you wanted to know who Pablo Picasso was, or artists that really, Pablo Picasso is iconic, but artists that you don't know about. He just really, I thought, made it entertaining and made you want to get out of the tram and go up close to the sculptures and be part of it. So when you did go on the trek, it was like a treasure hunt. you know, you knew what you wanted to see, you know, and then you got surprises along the way, like, oh yeah, he said this, you know. So that was cool to have that kind of experience. I know that, you know, if it's an indoor museum, you don't get that, but you know.
Sometimes there are museums that have docents, you know. Have people who are trained, people who are pretty knowledgeable about all the exhibits, and they will take people around. And those are good. I kind of like them because you could ask questions.
Right.
There's another little gizmo that I've seen in some exhibitions, which is an audio thing that you rent it kind of and you return it when you're through with the exhibit. From a personal standpoint, I try not to use those. I guess it's because I've taken a lot of art history, so I know what I'm looking at for the most part. Mm. And sometimes when I go to see something, I will want to go, you know, I see something else, I think, well, I'm gonna go check this other thing that I just saw and compare them. And the audio just keeps going.
Yeah. Now, I know what you mean. It's like sometimes you want to see it first.
Yes.
And make your own mind up. And then if you want to know more and you want to listen to it, then you can.
I think it's really nice when an individual responds to the art. Not to the tag that has the name on it. And now they recognize the name. So now they're looking in their mind, they're looking at something important. And they can say, oh, I saw such and such a work, you know, and they give it his name. And they're not talking about the work itself or how it affected them, if it did, you know, because not every artwork is going to affect all of us.
Right.
At any given time.
Yeah.
Well, going on the tram experience, it was like an overview of the park because of the way it was set up and how it was the legacy of Frederick Meyer.
It was beautiful.
But going on foot, it was a whole night and day difference. Yeah. It wasn't, you know, and honestly, don't ask me where the Pablo Picasso sculpture was. Don't, because I can't tell you. But I will tell you, we found things along the way that just were mind-blowing. And you just, you know, I think it's so personal. Art is so personal. But it is, I encourage people to go. I think, honestly, a fun date I went on was the San Diego Art Museum.
Uh-huh.
And it was with my date and his family. And that's where we saw Escher's art. And we were at that exhibit. And
I remember seeing that show. It was amazing.
Did we even know you at that time? I don't know if we knew you even at that time. Oh, it was amazing. And going through that exhibit, I was just like, wow. I mean, I'd heard of it and seen some art, but then being there in that art and then also being in the museum itself where the security were like, do not get too close to the picture.
Well, yes.
Well, yeah. Not supposed to touch it.
You know, part of seeing something in person, like, you know, you see a book and it's got an Escher picture, or you see a cocktail table book, you know, and it's got Picasso's work in it. And you think you know what it looks like, but the reproductions in magazines, the slick reproductions, don't let you understand the brush strokes, the texture.
This is texture.
That even a good reproduction doesn't pick up. So I know when I was teaching art history, I would always, you know, kind of make an assignment that you know, they had to go to a museum so many times and write about it. But it was you know, for some people, that's kind of drudgery. But for a lot of people, it was wonderful because they came back and they would say, I never realized something, whatever it was about somebody's work or somebody's painting. And it was an eye opener, because also one of the things you can't tell from a reproduction is the scale, the size of the object that you're looking at, or the painting that you're looking at.
Exactly.
So it's really important to be able to see art in person.
It's like, if you look at a photograph of a dog or a cat, as good as those photos may be, it is not the same as the live dog or cat. It's just not. It's not 3D.
Who's ever been on vacation and takes a view of the mountains or the ocean or whatever, and they get their pictures back, you know, it's kind of disappointing because because what you think of, what you see in real life as being huge, now is this tiny little thing on a 5x5.
Well,
even taking photographs of places, you know, you see something and it's not the same on a little screen of a computer.
But the personal experience is different than a static representation of what you saw.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why people need to travel and go and see it for themselves.
Well, that's something about museums. I wanted to bring up the difference between a museum and a gallery, because galleries, you're seeing something current. Sometimes you see something that's a real collector's piece, you know, you see those too. But in a museum, I mean, we've been to museums. I'm going to get its name right. I know we've talked about them on the show before in El Cajon, I think it is. Is it El Cajon or La Mesa? Is a Southwestern artist. Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to Google it while we're talking, but he's a very famous Southwest artist, and he has a huge portion of this museum in this small downtown kind of area.
Which town?
And
I can think of some Western artists and some museums in Oklahoma. They may not be the one.
I was thinking in El Cajon, California. Olaf Wikström or Ola?
Olaf.
Know what I mean? Yes.
Yeah.
Olaf Wikström.
He was really from El Cajon, California.
Yeah, El Cajon. That's what I was saying. Yeah. El Cajon. Yeah. I was saying El Cajon, California. But you go in the museum and it's dedicated to the Western. It's not just him, but when you're in there. So this to me it blew my mind. It was one of those museums I went in thinking, okay, here we go, a bunch of old saddles, and no offense to old saddles, they're incredibly interesting. But here we see this man's work that I've heard of, and you think El Cajon, dusty cowtown kind of thing, you know what I mean? East County, get in there, and oh my God, this guy is incredible. So he's from there. They have him, and he's in other museums. Prescott, I've seen his work in Prescott, Wickenburg. I've seen his art in a lot of areas, and he's incredible. But here it was in his hometown. And I went, okay, hello, this guy is really good. So to me, this was above the gallery standard, but at the same time, you need him in the museum because he's from there, and he. You know what I mean? So that's where I wanted to go about that difference, because he's been in I've seen his work in galleries and in museums.
Right. Yeah, but where he grew up and where he worked, that's history.
Yes.
And that's history. That's different than seeing Leonardo da Vinci paintings everywhere. That's not where he's from everywhere. He's only really from one place. He may have studied in different places, but he was born in one place. So that's the difference.
I think going back to what you were saying about being surprised, you know, where you find some of these things. I went to a museum and I was just on a trip. I wasn't particularly wanting to look at art, but we went by this on the highway, we went by the sign. It said Springerville Art Museum. And I thought, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. But we didn't stop in. We went back a couple of days later because we didn't have anything else to do. And I was so amazed at this museum. It's a wonderful experience to anybody to go somewhere and just be so blown away by what is in a museum. Maybe it's just because it's a surprise, but when the work is so outstanding, and when you read the history of this museum, it was even more outstanding because it was in a high school, a former high school, and it was started in 1901. A couple of artists gave some work to the high school because they thought the kids should be able to see good art. And that happened there. Some other artists gave some the next year. Well, then by the third year, the students were so excited, they started earning money to at the end of the year, buy a painting for the school as a gift to the school.
Oh, cool.
This went on for years and decades. that the students did this. And they had such a collection that they hung it in the hallways initially. By 1960s, 63 or 64, somewhere around there, the population had grown so much that they had to have a new school. And what were they going to do with this art collection? So the town by this time, and the city by this time, were invested in the idea that this is, you know, all this art was important. And so they gave the school building, the old high school building, they organized a new board of trustees, but they gave it over completely to art as an art museum.
Wow.
And it's still going, and they've added on to it twice. Mm. And I mean, I really recommend, if anybody is in that area of Utah, it is well worth your time to go to spend there looking at the art.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, when you think about kids being involved in that,
right,
and spearheading it, you know, that's amazing. You know, I would like to interview them to see how it impacted their lives.
It really emphasizes how people respond, and young people respond to visual art.
This is so true. Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, especially in recent times, visual art is not available in a lot of school systems anymore. So it's really, really important, I think, to look at this from an historical standpoint, that what can be done. I mean, how it can take off and inspire, you know, decades of students.
I think it's also really important for regions to have it, because it's also part of, like, you know, talking about the Western art, like, you know, El Cajon is on the map for him, and Frank Zappa, by the way. But anyway, so, but I mean, and El Cajon has grown so much more over the years. So I really, it's a good destination, people. But I just want to say, but that's something that, like what you're doing with, you know, the Fine Art Museum for Silver City in the Southwest region of where you are in New Mexico, is a huge deal, because it puts it on a tourist map. It adds value and shows the values. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there can be all these values. In other words, all this amazing art in a region, but if you can't see it and it's not accessible, you don't understand the value unless you see it. And it does go beyond the print brochure, a magazine,
absolutely,
even magazines, or any of that.
You had mentioned galleries. You know, what's the difference between galleries and museums? And I mean, that made me think of Silver City, because we've got a lot of art galleries. I mean, we're only a 10,000 population town, and we've got nearly 20 art galleries here at any given time. So
that's awesome.
Art is really good, but you see, in a gallery, the difference between a gallery and a museum is that the gallery is trying to sell work. That's their business, whereas a museum is preserving work and exhibiting it. It's not for sale. So museums collect work based on
value.
I'm not talking about
monetary value. It's about historic value.
Yes. Thank you. And how it fits into what they already have, so they can tell, you know, the exhibit becomes a narrative thing about the art.
At one time I was taking tours to Kenya, and one of the stopovers was in Copenhagen or Amsterdam. And there was an air controller strike. So we ended up there for 3 days, and everybody was like complaining, but you know, it's like, just go walk from the hotel. And I discovered there was a museum about Rodin, the sculptor. Uh-huh. And so I went in, and I, number one, couldn't believe it was free. And I knew who he was, and I'd seen many pictures of his sculptures. But going into the gallery where the sculptures actually were, and a lot of them were replicas. There was only like, I think, two or three originals, and they were crumbling, and I could see the difference between the real ones and the replicas. But I have to say, my idea of sculpture changed when I could see the actual like sculpted thing, yep, as opposed to a picture of it. It's a whole different world.
Yes.
And I don't know how to put it into words, but it came with, it's like, it was almost like meeting people. Mm-hmm. In a way, it was, yes, more live somehow, because when you have a painting, it's painting, but when you have a sculpture, it's 3D in a way, because you can go around it like a painting, maybe a 3D painting, like it has depth and all that, but you can't go see the back of, like if somebody paints a barn, you don't see the back of it.
Oh, Victoria, please paint the back of your paintings for us.
No, but you know, you know what I'm saying? But a sculpture, yes,
yeah,
you walk around it, it's a whole different world. Yeah. I mean, I love them both. I love both art forms, but that's where I first really went, wow. And I know this was an ancient dude. He's historical. I knew his name. I went to art school and I, you know, but when I actually got to see it, I had a whole new appreciation for nothing in the course that I took prepared me for seeing it real. Right.
Yeah, it's that point is existing in the same space that you're in. So
yeah,
you know, you have that. It's a more immediate. I mean, it's, and you're right. It's like seeing, an old friend. You've seen a picture of it. Now you're meeting it in person.
Yeah,
it really does make a difference.
It's totally different.
And paintings too. And because I think there is the ability to actually see size. You know. When you're looking at something in print in a magazine or a coffee table book, you're never getting the true perspective of size. Right. I don't care if people put a quarter next to it and all that. You just don't. I mean, you just can't get it. And it's like when you see it on the wall, even if it's teeny, teeny, then you get it better than if you're seeing it in a book. I mean, it just is true.
Yeah.
You know, you've got teeny, teeny pictures. Those. You know, well, no,
what's that
but
mean?
But to see them in a book versus seeing them in person is a night and day difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, you pick up the quality of the materials that they're made out of, you know, which you miss entirely in a reproduction of a book.
Yeah. You can't see the texture really.
No.
And quite frankly, painting smell, you don't,
that's all
they do. And you don't pick that up in a book.
Yeah.
I don't know. The galleries, to me, there's just this, when you go to gallery, it's like a library where, and like a graveyard. And I mean this in a good way. It's a very respectful place. So there's a calming to it. You can have discussion, but it's quiet.
Yeah.
It's have peace and let
like
other
a library.
People have. That's what I said. I said, you know, it's like a library in a graveyard. There's respect. You can have discussion. You can talk. But there's this respect of other people's experiences, which I think is really a unique experience. You know, when you go to music, we're all partying or people are in your face while you're trying to see the band perform or whatever, you know. But when you're in a gallery, a library, all of those things.
Yeah.
Calm down. And by the way, graveyards to me also have some amazing art. I'm just going to say that's a whole other art thing.
Oh yeah, they do.
In fact, that should be a whole another segment.
We'll do it.
Let's do
graveyard
it.
Art.
I find graveyard
I like
art
it.
To me
graveyard
is fascinating.
Art because and it's not only the first thing you see when you walk through graveyards is the wealthy people have all the ornaments, but we've found that that's not always true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
It is interesting.
The museum part, I think it's, you know, then you think about how towns got them, like how much work you're going into. I mean, how much work goes into this to get an actual bona fide fine art museum in a town. Mm. You think about these icons in cities around the world.
Mm. You know, there's so much more to it than hanging pictures on a wall or moving stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's an eye-opening experience for me, because to delve into it and read what should be done, what needs to be done, what can make it better, why things have failed with our museums. I mean, there's so much to think about.
Well, there's the business side, yep. There's right. the marketing side, yep. and then there's the preservation side, which is exactly. huge, because you have to, whatever you procure for that museum, you have to be able to protect it,
yep.
save it. I mean, when you think of it, that's a huge project.
You know, when you're trying to start something that will last, you know, in forever, you know,
yeah.
I don't know if it will, but that's your intention is that after yeah. you're gone, this is continuing.
It's going to be there. Yeah.
And we have in every museum, there are directors or trustees that protect. Mm-hmm. What your mission is, what your yeah. initial mission is. Sometimes you have to change a few regulations because things change. You get bigger, maybe, and it requires more personnel, more regulations, and so forth. Mm-hmm. But the directors are committed. In every museum, they represent the community where the museum is, and mm-hmm. and they have to put aside any kind of conflict of interest that they might have, where they might gain financially, so that they have to be squeaky clean as far as that goes, and their whole goal is to make a benefit for the community that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't know about the directors.
Well, they don't.
They see an entity, and they see pictures, or they see, you know, whatever kind of artwork it is.
They don't see the behind. They don't yeah.
think about how it got there.
Yeah. How it continued. Exactly. Exactly.
And a lot of museums are free. And the reason that they're free is because the directors have been out for a long time, you know, several iterations of directors have worked to build an endowment so that. Mm. Actually, the museum doesn't require any entry fee. Mm.
Yeah.
That's hard. And it's hard mm-hmm. in these days right now, when the arts took a knock over the last 10, 15, 20 years. I think the arts, mm. not just in schools, but nonprofits not getting the, you know, the sustenance they need, you know. Yeah. It's really gone down to individuals giving towards, you know, what they care about.
Yes.
Which is hard mm-hmm. because at the same time, you've got to think about people who don't know that they're, you have to recruit them. You know, you got to let them know that they're interested in art. They may not yeah. know yet, but we're going to get you there. You know?
Well, when we first started talking about doing this topic, I began to think about all the museums I'd ever been to mm-hmm. in person and how many of them were started by one person or a few people or a family. Mm-hmm.
Right,
and then they grew because other people could see the vision, and they could see yeah. how, you know, what was mm. what they have an art collection, they have a painting that's particularly fine. What's going to happen to it when they die?
Mm-hmm.
And they decide that they don't want to keep it hidden. They want to give it to the public. They want everybody to be mm. able to enjoy it. And that's really a selfless thing, I think, because mm. they're not going to get anything out of it, you know.
There's that, and then there's the museums are built on a family legacy where yes. the
like Frederick Meyer
yeah they yep. die and they yep. have this legacy, and there's really maybe no one left to leave it to, or they just sure. want it to be public
yep.
and you know, so there's those two kinds of legacies.
I think that's huge because it's the legacy, mm-hmm. but it's to be accessible. I mean, that's something, you know, as we travel, it's public art, public spaces, right? We're trying to find, you know, most parks are free or cost effective for families to go in, right?
Yeah.
That's the same thing with art museums, mm-hmm. going in and being accessible to see these great pieces of art, people that you didn't know. I mean, the Escher exhibit, right, when it was in San Diego, but I was so blown away about art that I've read about, heard about, and art that I've never known about. Escher was very new to me, and then I was like, holy cow, this is insane. But to be able to be accessible, you shouldn't have to be, you know, rich to appreciate art, basically.
That's
what I think is so important about public. We've talked about public art for years, and we cover public art with you, that, you know, and most public art is commissioned and, you know, vetted and judged and juried and all of that, and the artist gets paid for it and the public gets to enjoy it. And I think that's part of that role with a lot of museums. Some do have to charge a cover. It just depends on who, what, and where, you know?
Well, mm-hmm. it takes a long time to get an endowment together that makes an institution very stable and able to operate. Because when you think of all the size of most museums and the amount of utilities they have to pay, for instance, and the amount of
and the staff, they have to pay,
so the costs are there.
Insurance.
Right. And
exactly.
So, I mean, most museums can't afford to insure their art. I mean, there's no way they can't get it back. You know, once it's gone, it's gone. So what they're mostly concerned with is liability.
But look at the Mona Lisa. Yeah. Mona Lisa's been around the world and been stolen how many times? You know?
Yeah. The American Museum Association recommends that a museum charge whatever is the going rate for like going to a movie in your area. So that if your movie
that
costs
makes sense.
$8,
that makes sense.
But then there's also a lot of things that you can do to bring that cost down or get rid of it entirely at certain days. Like for instance, our museums are going to have to charge a fee, an entrance fee, but we're also going to have free days. All children will always be free. Or senior citizens will get a big reduced rate. So we have to do that because we're starting out. But that doesn't mean that we don't have fundraisers and that sort of thing to gradually build our account up and invest our money so that it will get more money that we can eventually be free.
Everybody. That makes sense.
That's awesome. I mean, it takes time. It's really interesting hearing you go through this process and everyone that's working with you on this project. Cause there's a bunch of people, a lot of people have donated art, people working behind the scenes, you know, but it's so interesting to hear this process because I think again, we're going back to that value word that people get to understand, like the museum just didn't pop up.
No,
you know?
No, it's a big cultural benefit. And not everybody realizes it immediately, but I think it's established and there, you know, people who haven't gone to a museum ever before stop in. They have a good time. You know, their kids go. They see things they've never seen before, or they look at things in a different way, and they start talking. They're talking to each other about it. So there's a lot of good things that are beyond preservation, beyond just looking, because now you're sharing and communicating.
Well, there's that old idea about libraries and museums, that's for old people, you know, and researchers, that kind of thing. I mean, there is that attitude out there. And nothing could be further than the truth. And I think part of it stems from when you're in school and they take a busload of kids into a museum or a library, first thing they tell them is to be quiet.
Yeah.
And that's a big downer right there.
Yeah.
Because now you can't react to what you're seeing. And I get that they're supposed to be quiet and respectful, but for a child who's discovering something and is verbal about it, to be told to be quiet might not be the best. Just let them talk.
That's right, Nancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, seriously.
And a good docent or a good part of our project is a museum, but the other part of that is an art center, and we're trying it involves art making for various ages. We can do classes for various ages, but the kids are really important because you could use the museum itself to stimulate them. You could use other things to stimulate them, and that's where the interactive approach works. Working really well because the kids get excited, and if it's set up in an interactive way, they have an outlet for their excitement, and it's appropriate in the museum for them to be excited about what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. So it may be that you don't want to mix up kids group with a bunch of adults. I don't know. Some people, older people might not be able to handle it, but it's really, really important to have that.
Well, you can have school days that are kind of, this is a school day, everybody know about it ahead of time, especially when it's a smaller community, it'll be a smaller building. Like the bigger building, I think there's different things you can do about that. But if the youth aren't ever getting that opportunity, if they don't get that opportunity, art will not be protected. So the museums will lose everything that they're thinking of doing if we do not involve the youth. I mean, as a child, going to a museum's got to, even the other day you said you went to a museum in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Yes. And that had a huge impact on you. Cool. But the artist you went to see was a huge impact.
The fun thing about that was they had an interactive thing. Interactive doesn't have to be a big Magilla here, but they had a light table out, and the work was Wayne Thiebaud's work, and some of his prints had a lot of cross hatching and cross hatching, and they were trying, they just had almost like blind drawings of what he had done, and the kids were, where there were pencils and paper out there, and you put it on the light table, and you put the crossing and has cross-hatching.
Oh, so I get it. Yeah.
They could see how you could make shadows that way. And they were very involved in that.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was a very simple thing, but what they were learning.
But it makes
shadows to make three dimensions.
But it makes it relative to them. They can, if they can do it, they can understand it.
Yes.
As opposed to being just talked to.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between being talked to and physical experience.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Awesome. I love
that.
That's
awesome that they did that. So that was in San Antonio.
Wow.
And, so this is an example of you driving to go and see a specific exhibit. And so, because a lot of the museums have these traveling exhibits, like the Van Gogh, like you were talking about, they all have these, here's your regular, we always talk about de Grazia Gallery in art. This is a museum, it's a historical landmark, and they have their main collection of Ted de Grazia art, and then the rest is rotating exhibits and guest artists and things like that. But their whole component is this educational part, where they have kids going in and, but people travel to that museum every year to see the new exhibits and to see the spring. They have a Lent experience, like every Lent series that they put on it. And Lance, the director, is like, if we don't put the Lent series up,
they're in trouble.
They will get phone calls, faxes, emails,
social
media. Well,
that has now become a cultural experience for the community.
Right. Every year they have to put that up at Lent, the Way of the Cross.
Yeah, they have to.
It's interesting how that happens. And this is all over one person's art.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But he was part of that community. So.
Yeah. And sometimes there are not a lot of art galleries that just feature one person's art, but there are quite a number of them in the United States. There's one in Kansas, Berger San Zane, called an art gallery, but it's really a museum. And if there's a little bit of other people's work there, but basically there are others, like there's one done Marfa, Texas. There's another place where an artist, actually a living artist, started a foundation down there, and his name is Donald Judd, and he was sort of a minimalist sculptor. But the town of Marfa has grown because he founded this art foundation, and there's a sculpture park and all kinds of, now there's other art museums, galleries there. So
and spaceships.
Yeah, so it's one thing begets another very often.
Even the Prada store.
Marfa is known for aliens and spaceships, the Marfa lights and all that. We hung out there for a little bit. It's really,
did you?
Yeah,
a little bit. We wanted to stay longer. We did go to the Prada shoe store. Everybody has to go to the Prada shoe store.
I know. And
it's like its own little, it's a museum in itself on the way in.
Well, like a pair of shoes.
It's a roadside attraction.
Yeah.
And then after you drive out, don't forget to go to the thing.
The thing, you have to go
to the
thing.
Have you been to the thing, Victoria?
Well, the thing is over by Arizona, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, I think you get on the way there.
I have never been to the thing. Mike has been there, and he won't tell me anything about it. He says
there's a mummy.
To go there.
There's a mummy at the thing.
No, you can't tell. You have to go
apparently
there.
There's a mummy. I want to go to
you
see the mummy.
You can't tell. Stop
there's
it.
A mummy at the thing. They put it on their advertising. There's a mummy at the thing.
But you have to go there.
Yeah.
I've seen several mummies in my lifetime, and the worst one was in Pretoria, the mummy who was wrapped except for one big toe. And it was in the museum, and a friend of mine pointed out, we're like, oh, and it was pelting down rain, and we were trapped in the museum because this rainstorm was so bad, and we were stuck in the hall with the mummy, and we could see the toe. I'm like, is that real flesh? He's like, is it paper mache? What is it? But it was rotting. I was like, dude, this is gross. But
an interesting part of it. Embalming is part of art.
I know, but it's totally hanging out. You'd think they'd cover it or something. But I mean, and I wonder, like now, if I went back there and saw the same mummy, would the toe be totally gone? And because I'm talking years ago.
Depends on what they've done with the temperature.
I know. Would it shrivel up? I mean, it was weird that it was still there because it's a mummy from like 500, 600, 700,000 years ago. I don't know how long ago. But why was it still there?
Maybe it's a relative from the thing.
It wasn't wrapped properly.
Well, I don't know. But I wanted to touch on this about art museums also having art that's different. So in Las Vegas, there's a museum of neon lights. And neon lights is kind of a design thing, right?
Yeah.
All neon signs are going away, cost, and all, you know, we have a friend that Jeroen and Maggie that travel the country when they're allowed in the country and document, you know, whatever neon advertising and lights and signs that they can. And it's amazing what they have captured. And unfortunately, a lot of it is going away as they were doing it, you know?
I know.
And they're doing it to preserve it in some way. But then there is like a museum dedicated to that, to preserve this, which is huge cost. And that is a form of art.
Course, and it's history. It's history.
I mean, it started out as commercial, and that medium of light and gas was adopted by artificial sculptors. So
it's like Charles Schulz. He's got a museum. He's got a museum too. Is it Schultz?
Who are you talking about?
The Peanuts dude. Oh, I'm getting his name wrong. Oh,
Charles Schultz.
Yeah, Charles Schultz. He's got a museum dedicated to him. I mean, he should. Presidents have libraries. Artists should have their own museums. Or be part of a fine art museum that's a collective. To me, it's awesome that, selling the art.
It's all part of history. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go back and other generations try to understand what we did when we were here and why we did what we were here, the only thing they're going to have to go on is what's left behind, which would be museums, books, and probably audios and television things will be kept, which is a lot better than like what, you know, former generations had to look at, which was, here's your set of bones. You know what I mean? As generations go forward, there's a lot more left that is preserved. So future generations can actually really understand what was going on.
Interesting. This is cool stuff. So everyone, victoriachick.com, keep up with her website. She's on our show. My gosh, this is so cool. Every third set. No, I'm getting it wrong now. See, here we go with the new thing. You think I can't look at my notes, but it is. Yeah, it is every third Saturday. Victoria's on the show. And sometimes, Victoria, we're going to be talking about Silver City too, to talk about what's going on in the world in Silver City, New Mexico. And sometimes it'll be art history. And we talk about all kinds of things with you over the years. So looking forward to this series. And everyone, victoriachick.com is the website. And keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. But thank you for joining us.
Well, I always enjoy it. I always enjoy talking to you. And I will look forward to the next session we have.
Yes. Cool. And it's so good to see you too. And your paintings on the wall behind you. That's
I know. The cat's playing with your hair.
Yes. And that's called figurative art, Nancy.
That's called dinner time.
Yes. Oh, that's cool. Well, Nancy's got the horse tail coming out of her ear, and apparently my head is up the horse's.
Well, we're talking about animal life.
There it is.